This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The countdown to the NFL draft continues. We got plenty of NBA playoff conversation on the way as well as we welcome you in to the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. A warm welcome as well to our newest VSiN affiliate, Lynchburg, Virginia. Virginia Talk Radio Network, 93.3 FM, 1320 AM. Always great, Michael, that we continue to expand our reach out here.
Absolutely. And, you know, I do the Fast Eddie Lane show from often. I'm thinking I'm going to do it next week for the draft for him. Wonderful person, wonderful show. Lynchburg, have you ever been through that area, Stormy? It's absolutely gorgeous. So welcome. We're delighted to have you and delighted to be part of the network.
See, I had to start on something positive because now we're going to talk Philadelphia 76ers, and I don't know how positive you're going to be, but obviously they do cement their spot in the playoffs as a 7 seed, taking on the
cemented.
2 seed Knicks.
There was a lot of cement gushing out of there. There was cement gushing all over it. You could just see it. Yeah.
So, Michael, in that play-in game, because the fans on in the venue were booing the 76ers at halftime when they were down 12, what was it like in your household? Like, what were you like sitting on the couch watching that game unfold?
Fully expected it. You know, like I told you, Millie accused me, you're not a fan. How are you not rooting for him? I said, I'm realistic. I understand this. I mean, it was fully expected, you know, that they couldn't make shots. They didn't adjust, that they have no toughness. So I was like, I knew this was going to happen. And then the second half started, and you know, Miami without the great Jimmy Butler in there, and Nick Batum was able to make some shots. And next thing you know, they got themselves back in the game. And then when you're watching the end of the game, all of us, all 20,000 in Wells Fargo, all of us sitting on couches somewhere else, kind of had a sense that, you know, there's a good chance we could blow this. There's a really, because we've seen it so many times before. And they were able to make 12 consecutive free throws and close the game out. And they were finally got the win by a point, which to me was great for them. And now they move on to the Knicks, which, how are they favorite, Stormy, against the Knicks? Beat them 3-1 in the regular season and dominated him in all three games.
I think that people have the perception that because Julius Randle isn't going to be available for the series and that Joel Embiid is back, and since he's been back, they've been winning, that they're the rightful favorite, that still they're the biggest competition to the Celtics in the Eastern Conference. But I'm with you. I'm not buying it. And whether it is the conditioning factor for your boy Joel Embiid or just the fact that coming back from that knee injury and maybe not being as 100% as you want to or need to be to play playoff caliber basketball, I'd be very concerned. If I'm the New York Knicks and I'm watching that game on Wednesday, I'm feeling great. I'm feeling extremely confident because we've got Jalen Brunson on our side and he's on a tear.
Right. And no question, they got Brunson, they got toughness. Thibodeau's a tough coach. You know, and so I don't doubt this at all. And I think when you really, like, what you just made a really important point there that I think most people don't realize. You said Embiid's not healthy. He's never healthy this time of the year. Like, that's just, that goes with the package of Joel Embiid. He's never healthy. He's always going to have something wrong. You know, last year, he was able to win his MVP, and against the Nets, he gets hurt. You know, and so that, like, it just is going to happen. And I think when you see it, you just know it. And I think that's where the apprehension is when the fans are sitting there. It's one thing to have a team that you kind of know is without its best players, but it's another thing to have a team where they're not playing at least at a high level like they did in the first half. And that's why they got booed. Look, I'm telling you, this Hartenstein now, he gives Embiid trouble. He's physical. He's big. And he'll push Embiid. Like, what was happening in that game the other night was Embiid was getting pushed out. You know, he doesn't want to get down the low post anyway. So every time he's trying to set up, he's further and further out. Mm-hmm. That physicality bothers him.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, pointing to the injury as well, if you're like getting bodied down low, that's not going to make you feel great on that knee either. The Knicks are a 3-point home favorite in the opening game to kick things off on Saturday. But Philly, as you mentioned, a slight favorite in the series, minus 115 to the Knicks minus 105, despite New York being the 2 seed. The series number of games is set at 5.5, minus 200 to the over, plus 165 to the under. The favorite in the exact outcome props is Sixers in 6 at plus 310. So that's the most likely outcome according to the books.
I would play, for me, in the Knicks in 6 or 650. I told Bill Berman today when I came in, I would play the Knicks in 6.
Okay.
Because I think the physicality, I know they don't have Jules Randle. I understand that. They have Shake Milton on their team who played for Philly. He kind of knows what goes on in that locker room. I mean, he kind of knows the more physicality you get. Same thing with Alex Burke. He was here before. DiVincenzo, you know, because they can space the floor, they've got good shooters. They're tough-minded. And they've got Brunson, and that's a tough matchup for them. You know, they're going to have to stay in front of Brunson. They're going to have to handle him. You know, they've got a bunch of fouls between Mitchell Robinson and Hartenstein that they can use on Embiid and push him around. I mean, last night, I thought it was interesting. Nurse went to a 7-man rotation that quickly. He, you know, he put Cam Payne in late in the game, and he hit the 3 from the corner, but I thought he would use at least an 8-man rotation. Like, there's no way you can jump the minutes on Embiid in a 7-game series and think you're going to get him to stay fresh and in shape, because he'll just go from one 3-point line to the other. I mean, it's just, he's exhausted. Look at him. I mean, what Doris Burke said, and she, I give her tremendous credit. She's been saying this for a while. One of the few people in basketball that do. Barkley does. But one of the, you know, if he ever got his conditioning in shape, yeah, he could be tremendous. But last night she said he was exhausted in pregame workout. Stormy, I went to a game with Berman and Thomas Gable. He didn't even come out for pregame warm-up.
Well, yeah.
He wasn't even out there for
Michael,
pregame warm-up.
He can't waste the energy exertion. He just can't do it. He needs every second of it for game action. So that is the third game of a 4-game slate for the Saturday first round games getting underway. We have the Magic and Cavs, Suns and Timberwolves, and the Lakers and Nuggets all getting underway in round one as well. Which of those series intrigues you most, or do you think that you have a good feel for?
Well, I think the Magic, I think what Mike Somich said about the Magic is true. They're long. I love Jonathan Isaac coming out of Florida State when he did. He was long. He had a couple knee injuries, but he makes it very difficult. He's a perimeter player who's got length. I think those always give you trouble. You know, I'm anxious to see what happens with the Timberwolves. You know, can they play like they did in the regular season? Anthony Edwards is dynamic, right? We know that. But can they play with the two big fellas where, you know, when we saw Rudy Gobert, when he would play at Utah and everybody kind of spaced the court and he became useless come playoff time, I kind of wonder what's going to happen here, obviously. And if you're the Suns, I mean, look, this, you know, you went all in on this, right? How many times have we seen these teams that go all in that can't quite get it done? So I'm anxious to see that one. And I'm anxious to see what the Nuggets have in store for us, too, because each one of those games, even though they swept them, as you said yesterday, were very close with the Lakers.
Yeah, Nuggets laying 7 in that first game of the series as well. At home, the Lakers did get out to Denver early, making the trip on Thursday to get acclimated. But yeah, it was a tough series last year, very back and forth, although the results all ended up on Denver's side as they go on to win the NBA title. Now, I was very surprised looking through our rundown here, Michael, to see that today's What's on Michael's Mind, it's not NBA related. It's not NFL related.
Yeah.
It's NHL related. Who are you? What do you have?
Well, I love good stories and I love good writing. And I think Todd Walsh, the voice of the Arizona Coyotes, did a tremendous job in saying goodbye. And if you have a chance to watch it on YouTube or watch it on Twitter, I thought he was outstanding and he shaped it really well. You know, one of the things when you're telling a story, you have to get people to understand where you're coming from. And he went from a rock and roll station in Phoenix to when they moved down from Winnipeg, he got the job and he became the voice of the Coyotes and he became really part of their community, part of the NHL community. And he told some great stories. The great Fred Shiro here in Philadelphia when he ran the Philadelphia Flyers on the blackboard in their locker room before he played, you know, win tonight and we'll be together for a lifetime. And I think to me, what he did in this talk was he showed all of us the power of why we love sports, the connectivity between a town and their team. Mm-hmm. And he did it with great passion. He did it with honesty. He didn't get into the political nature of why did this owner take the team away and move to Salt Lake, all that stuff. He just basically shared and emptied his heart about why the Coyotes were so important to Phoenix and so important to him. And I thought it was really, really well done.
Yeah, it was a beautiful tribute and goodbye. Just how one of the like striking moments for me, at least, was when he said hockey is about people and talked so much about, as you referenced, the connection between the people and the community with the team, with the sport, how he said working for the Coyotes and working in the NHL in general gave him personal and professional purpose. And the way that people rallied around him and supported him when his parents passed away and different things like that. So it was a great tribute for anybody who hasn't seen it. As Michael said, definitely go check it out. And for the Arizona Coyotes, it's an unfortunate departure. It really is. After 28 years in the desert, they are headed to Salt Lake City. While it's not officially official yet, obviously a tribute and a goodbye like that tells you all you need to know that it's going to happen. And the situation in Glendale never seemed to work. And the fact that they had to play in ASU's hockey arena in Mullett Arena is a very sad state for an NHL franchise to have to do that. And so I just hope that in Salt Lake City that it ends up being positive and they're able to get, you know, the support that they need there.
I think they will. And, you know, they didn't get support in Winnipeg. That's why they moved down to Phoenix. So, you know, it's hard. And I think to me, you know, the importance of your team to support and everybody gets so defensive about these new stadiums for owners when really it creates infrastructure for communities as well. Now, look, I think they got to pay for them, but it also pays back the consumer and it pays back the town.
Yeah. Appreciate you sharing that, Michael. And of course, me being like the hockey gal that I am with my background, always love any opportunity to highlight the sport a little bit. Hopefully, with the Stanley Cup playoffs around the corner, maybe the other team in the desert could have success again. We'll see. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
For a limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits here at VSiN for free. All you need to do is sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. And it's not just for the games today, but future events by date as well. Take advantage, though. It's a limited time offer. VSiN.com/splits is how you can claim your free 2 week access to VSiN's betting splits.
Disagree with these takes?
No way.
No way.
Or do you approve?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. No doubt my mind.
No diggity, no doubt.
It's time to ask Michael Lombardi, no way or no doubt.
Now, you've already largely answered this question today, Michael, but I like it when you yell, so I'm going to throw it in here one more time. No way or no doubt, Michael. The 76ers are the rightful series favorites against the Knicks.
No way. When is this Joel Embiid Houdini like love affair going to end? I mean, when are we going to realize that the playoffs are conditioning? You got to play. You got to stay healthy. You got to stay off the ground. Perhaps maybe try that. Look, he's a fabulous player and he makes their team so much better. But, and this is a huge but, this isn't a little but, this is a big but, Stormy. There's no dependability. There's no reliability. And because you're going to have to cut down his minutes, I mean, the idiot Paul Reed over here says, well, thank God we're playing the Knicks. Like, oh, okay, that really is going to help your cause. That really, really is a good idea to say something stupid like that when you're going against a team that won over 50 games or 50 games. They haven't really had that home court advantage in the past like they're going to now. I mean, this is hard. And it takes mental fortitude. It takes mental toughness. All those things that under the Josh Harris administration, mm-hmm. as him as the owner, this franchise has failed to have.
You will appreciate at least that the betting market is on the move. The 76ers opened a minus 160 favorite, and it has been bet down significantly just to minus 115. And also just real quickly, because I am I'm a 12-year-old boy sometimes put in a 30-year-old female's body, because when you said it's a big butt, I had to laugh. Just a just a big butt. quarterbacks are the talk of the town when it comes to the NFL draft, Michael. For Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May to go 1-2-3 in that exact order is an odds-on minus 145 favorite. So, no way or no doubt, there is consensus across the league on the top quarterback rankings for the 2024 draft.
No way, Stormy. There is no consensus. I'm not sure they could. You could get consensus on regular Diet Coke or the new version of Diet. Like, there's just no way consensus happens in the NFL. Now, I know they want collaboration. That's the big word of the NFL. But consensus amongst teams is really challenging. I do think, though, in really talking to a bunch of teams and watching, I think there are four quarterbacks that have first-round grades put on them. And I think McCarthy is in that group. However, after that, I think it gets sketchy. It gets, does someone trade up? Does someone trade back? Does someone do something else? Where's Michael Penix? But in terms of the consensus, today Elliott Wolf came out and said that the third pick's up for sale. Okay, that makes sense. Everybody advertises their picks without having to pay a premium for the billboard. That being said, you know, if Drake May's there, would he take him? Or is he saying that to tell Joe Shane, come get the pick if you want Drake May? Who knows? Who knows? Because I think the order is completely different. I do think most people have one and two down where they think. I think it's Williams and Daniels. After that, it's a crapshoot.
Well, and to your point and what we talked about yesterday with some comments from Bill Belichick, that everybody's board across the league is different. What you have and what the other teams have, every single one is going to be different. And that is included at the top as well. Speaking of Bill Belichick, Michael, Seth Wickersham, who you spoke to this past week for the article that ended up coming out yesterday on ESPN, he said on 98.5 The Sports Hub, he doesn't believe Bill Belichick will coach in the NFL again. No way or no doubt, Bill will be a head coach in the NFL as soon as next season.
Well, I'm hoping there is no doubt he will be, but I do think that because of age, and because of the way the league is trending in terms of collaboration and people wanting this. But look, what we say here when there have been no losses is really different than what we'll say in October, November next year when there are losses. Fear does the work of reason. Fear does the work of reason. So I'm going to say no doubt he'll coach, because I truly believe, as Winston Churchill said in 1940 when he became the prime minister, the reason he got the job was fear did the work of reason. I believe that.
You mentioned Elliott Wolf and that number three pick potentially being up for grabs. There's a lot of teams that we've been talking about as potential draft day trade candidates. No way or no doubt there will be more than 6.5 draft day trades come Thursday.
Oh, boy, that's a lot. Yeah, I think so. Because of the sparsity of the defensive board, I do think there could be an over here. Yeah, I think there is a no doubt it could happen. Because, Stormy, you know, you want to get, like, you're Philadelphia, right? You look at Philly's depth chart. Philly can masquerade all the things they want to masquerade about. We're not doing this. We're not doing that. Yet. They need a corner badly. Both their corners are over 30 years old. Both of them can't play man-to-man anymore. What are they going to do? They just brought in Vic Fangio, who's not quiet. He's expressing, I'm sure, we better get some corners. And if you're Howie Roseman and you've done all these signings, right, and you've signed all these players in free agency for good deals, again, good deal, but giving you really good depth. Like, how many of your draft picks are going to make the team? Like, wouldn't you be better for a laser target to get the corner that you want than to sit around? So I think there's a lot of mentality with that, right? I think that's where it goes. And Philly's got 22, 50, 53. They have 2 second-round picks, albeit low. They could move up from 22 to get to 13. And get the corner that they want. If he slips, I think it's easy. And so I think that's the methodology that'll happen and why I think we'll see over 6.5 trades.
So with that thought in mind, because you're talking about a team that's outside of the top 10, where all of the talk about the bulk of trades has been who's going to trade up to get a quarterback. No way or no doubt, teams are more likely to trade into the end of the round than they are to trade up into the top 10.
I think the end of the round has real trade appeal to it. Because once again, right, would you rather, you know, if you're Denver and all you have is one quarterback on your roster, you have to get one. And so what you're trying to do is figure out, how do I maximize this, right? Like I said this before the draft, when the Browns picked Baker Mayfield, I would have traded down from Baker. I would have picked Bradley Chubb and Quentin Nelson, got two really good players, and then traded back into the first to get Lamar. Because he was slipping and everybody knew it. And he sat in that green room and Steve Bisciotti, the owner of the Baltimore Ravens, went in there and said, guys, let's get this guy. Let's take this guy. And they did. And it saved their franchise. You know, this is why owners make a difference. Steve did that. John York Sr. goes to Kyle and tells him, look, if you really have a fourth round grade on Brock Purdy, why are you wasting anybody's time? Just pick him in the seventh round. It saved their franchise. That advice, being logical or at least seeing the light, I think that's what will happen in the bottom of the first.
No question about it. The Lakers playing the Nuggets has not been a good proposition for Los Angeles in recent history. They've lost 8 straight, including getting swept in the Western Conference final last year. No way or no doubt the Lakers will fare better this time around against the Nuggets than they did last season.
No way. I look, you know, one thing about the NBA, the longer you play against teams, there's adjustments within games, but sometimes it just comes down to who's got the better team, right? And who has the ability. Will they sweep them? You know, I mean, if that's the no doubt they'll sweep, I would say no way they get swept. I think the Lakers will win one, but I don't think the Lakers are going to win the series. I just think it's too hard.
Nuggets are -310 in the series. Lakers +250. Denver for the sweep, 5-1. If you think the Lakers get one, +285 for Denver to win 4-1. Patrick Mahomes said recently he doesn't feel like he's anywhere near GOAT status, Michael. Got a long way to go still in his career. No way or no doubt Mahomes is right. He's nowhere near GOAT yet.
Well, no. I mean, look, he's chasing Brady. I mean, you know, when Brady's got 7 and you got 3. So how do you argue with his logic? And I love his logic. Unlike Paul Reed's stupid statement about the 76ers, this statement is what you love. You love somebody who has an appetite for more, who wants to do more things, who's not content. This is what's going to drive the Chiefs. And he knows making this statement is really not about him. Mm-hmm. He's sending a message to his team that, you know, we won last year, but we're going to have to come back and play even better next year. He's doing that. He is not doing this just to protect him or promote himself. He's doing this to promote his team.
In 6 seasons as the Chiefs' full-time starting quarterback, 3 Super Bowls, 3 Super Bowl MVPs, 2 league MVPs, and led the passing yards once and passing touchdowns twice. 28 years old, so he's certainly on his trajectory if he can maintain this type of greatness. But yeah, there is still a GOAT out there that he's got to chase. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Final half hour of the program is Thursdays with VSiN's own Mike Palm, VP of Operations here at Circa Resort and Casino, where we're broadcasting from, as well as Golden Gate in the D. Joining Michael and Stormy here as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line. And Mike Palm, how are we doing today? What's going on, my friend?
How are you? Michael, good to see you again.
Good to see you, Mike. Yeah, looking forward to seeing you in person next week. I see you had Jeremy Piven in the building the other day, Mike, or was that today?
Yeah, that was the other day. Yeah, I saw the photo as well that he took with a couple of our dancing dealers. Yeah, you never know who you're going to see here at the Circa.
Yeah, and so like Michael said, he's going to be down here for the draft as we do all our draft coverage, and you guys have a number of draft props that are up right now. How many props did you guys put up? You see in action already early?
I know there's 62 that have two-way bets, so either yes, no, or over, under. So, yeah, we're getting good action, $500 limit on all of them, so we've got a much deeper menu with a little bit smaller limits, but I think 500 is reasonable on the draft, and it's been met with good favor in the market so far, Michael.
And so what has been the most popular prop bet that has been out there? Is it the quarterbacks or is it something else?
No, it's all about the quarterbacks, individual quarterback spots, how many quarterbacks first round. You know, that's really what the folks, I'd say about 70% of the handle so far has been quarterback based.
So we were just talking.
What is your number I'm sorry, Storm. What do you have on over 4.5?
Yeah, we're still at 4.5. They bet it down a little bit. I know it was 210 at one point. I think it's down below $2 now. So money coming towards the over 4.5, and then you can, you know, isolate who you think the fifth quarterback's going to be, whether you think it's going to be Penix or you think it's going to be Bo Nix, basically. So there's plenty of action on both sides of that as well.
That's what we were talking about in the break, because instead of, in my opinion, like, I think that Michael Penix is going to be the fifth quarterback over Bo Nix. So I bet plus 140 on Michael Penix to be a first round pick instead of the minus number on over 4.5. But just personally, like, based on what you've been hearing and seeing, like, do you have a feel for whether or not it'll be 5?
I would say 5, because I'm very high on Penix, but I'm higher on, but I don't know the medical reports, Michael. So that's the uncertainty. But to me, yep. I would, you know, and everything's different, right? If things were different, they wouldn't be the same. I have him behind Daniels on my draft board. I have him third, ahead of May and ahead of McCarthy. I'm very impressed with him, and I don't think there's a real comparison between him and Nix at all.
Yeah, I think Michael Penix is really appealing. I think the hard part is figuring out the medical, right? And the fact that makes him so appealing is his ability to throw the deep ball and his throwing ability. He is probably the best pure passer in the draft. And so you combine that and his ability to strike down the field. Now, the negative is he ran 4.6, but he doesn't play like 4.6. And, you know, he's had some injury histories in the past, which ultimately concerns you. But I agree with you. I mean, he's done a wonderful job at Washington. I know they had good receivers there and a really good offensive line, but he made some incredible throws on the third level that very few players make.
In addition to the downfield throws, Michael, what about on third down? That's what I find so impressive about Penix, is that, you know, they would spread you out and he would just identify that open receiver, whether it was the tight end or wide receiver, and be able to put that ball very accurately. It's the antithesis of what I say about Lamar Jackson. If you're Baltimore, you don't want to be in third down and throwing situations with him, because there's too many times they don't convert. It's not even a league average conversion percentage when you get to third and four or more. But with Penix, he was so accurate on third down and kept moving the chains.
Yes, and that's where McCarthy has moved up to a solid first rounder, Mike. I know he's not going to go to the draft, but the thing that has made McCarthy a first rounder is the third down reel. And I think some of the things which you worry about with some of these guys on third down is, like with Josh Allen, for example. You know, Josh Allen struggled to be accurate all the time on third down, but the positivity of the plays was overwhelming to offset, you know, maybe you're not going to be as good on third down. And I think that's what you get with Penix. And he's going to miss some throws, but there's a lot of positivity that goes into it that you can see on the tape. I'm a Penix fan, Mike. I'm with you. I would be surprised. I think he's going to go in the first round. I think you're not going to find that. Like, he's played at a higher level better than Will Levis played. And Will Levis, you know, people were talking about him being the first pick in the draft last year.
Michael, if you were the Commanders at number two, and they know more or have collected more data than you have at this point, but knowing what you know, if they called you in and they said, Michael, we need your advice about the second pick, what would you tell them?
I would tell them you've got to marry the pick to the guy who's going to be coaching them and the offense that he's going to be running. I think this is really important. And I think use Mac Jones as an example. When he had Josh McDaniels coaching him, he was looked like a good player. When he didn't, he wasn't. Let's take Michael Penix. When Caden DeBoer coached him, really good player. When he didn't have DeBoer, not so good. Right? Jaden Daniels, not so good at Arizona, better when he got to LSU. A lot of this has to be linked together. If you felt like, especially in this draft, if you felt McCarthy had the best skills for what you wanted to run, and most of the West Coast people probably feel this way, then you can design an offense. Is he perfect? No. Does he lack some things? Yes. He's kind of an enhanced version of Kenny Pickett, if you will, with a better arm. But my point here is, if you marry the system to the player is going to look much better.
So does that lead us?
And I think that's really that's how you have to answer it.
But in other words, knowing that Cliff Kingsbury is going to be coaching the system, does that mean that the marrying is most likely to Jaden Daniels?
Yes, that's right. I think that's the one he would see because he can make plays with his feet. When the protection breaks down, I think he's got a chance to make play. He can run with it. There's a lot to like that fits into the Kyler Murray kind of vein. Now, one thing about Cliff's not running the Texas Tech offense any longer. He didn't run it at Arizona. There's going to be a tight end on the field, obviously, you know, but I think to me, that would be the guy. Like when I think about the quarterbacks in this draft, I think about who would appeal, like McCarthy. I think he would appeal to Kevin O'Connell. He would appeal to Sean Payton. When I think about Bo Nix, I think that the West Coast teams, that would he would appeal to. I think you got to marry that one up. You know, where Drake May appeals to the Giants because he's got great potential and they see Josh Allen in him, and some other teams might as well.
Well, we're nearing the finish line. 1 week from the draft starting in Detroit, we'll have answers to those questions here pretty soon. It's also the last day of the NHL regular season, NBA play-in games underway. We have series prices going on for both the NBA and NHL. Yeah. Early handle on those, what's being bet so far?
Well, we've only posted two series prices in the East. Nothing in the West, even though, we did post Winnipeg and Colorado. Colorado minus 145. But interesting, right? Because Winnipeg swept them and 17-4 goal differential this year in the three matchups, including the latest, the 7-0 drubbing in Denver.
And Colorado got bounced in the first round last year.
I don't know, Stormy. I'm not usually one to bet teams to win the cup at this point heading into the playoffs. They're usually either preseason or all-star break bets. But boy, Vancouver's out there at 19-1. You know, they get two home ice if they can get through the first two. And if Dallas gets eliminated, they could have home ice throughout the West. It's a big price, 19-1. And Winnipeg sitting out there at 18-1. Just two interesting things. I wouldn't look to bet anybody in the East. I think Boston and Toronto is priced about right, 120. People might think that's low. You know, we saw the problem last year with Jim Montgomery. He didn't stay to the rotation. Kenny this year. I never believe anybody should be a $4 favorite, and you're going to see, you see the Rangers are $4.50, right? And Carolina's over $4 against the Islanders. I would say, not that these teams are going to win, but the underdogs. But I would say, I think the Capitals actually have a better shot of going further into that series than the Islanders do, because I think Lindgren's been terrific once he got the starting role. And remember, they're very good on special teams. 5-on-5, they're not going to, if that series is all 5-on-5, they got no shot. But if the Rangers take some penalties and you can use Ovi in the power play, decent. The one other series I would bet, and if the Knights win tonight, then they lock up the three and the Kings head to Dallas. I would lay a game and a half with Dallas against the Kings. I don't think the Kings have much of a shot. I'm not laying $3.50 or $4, but I might even lay 2.5 games in that series.
Michael, let me ask one follow-up on hockey real quickly. Who would you prefer if you're the Golden Knights to play, Edmonton or Dallas?
I would prefer Edmonton only because I want to stay in the Pacific side, because I think the Pacific side is slightly easier for the second round matchup if Demko isn't fully healthy. I'll go real quick with you, Michael. So rapid fire answer. Is there a world where Harbaugh takes McCarthy at 5?
Ooh.
No.
Okay.
All right. And speaking of rapid
very
fire,
rapid.
That it is. We're going to hit the break here real quickly. And I agree with you, Michael. I'm still sold on them going offensive line. Yeah. I know there's a lot of talk about wide receiver and some of the other needs they need moving on from Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. But I'm with you. No JJ, but he could help put JJ in a better position if he trades out of the number 5 spot. We're going to hit the break here. When we come back, 3 big picture questions from Mike Palm to Michael Lombardi. Palm's pressing 3 is next on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournaments that roll on through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use the code VSIN. New customers that do can bet $5 and win $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code VSIN, V-S-I-N, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
pressing?
Yes, I say it's pressing.
This is Palms Pressing 3.
Now my mother told me never to answer a question with a question.
Sir, my client has answered every question asked by this committee with the utmost sincerity.
I do love the ambiance, the music. Let's go, Palms Pressing 3. Mike, what you got?
First segment about Washington and marrying the quarterback to the offensive system and play caller. What's the best advice you can give to any one particular team heading into this year's draft regarding their first pick? So a specific bit of advice for a specific team.
The Chicago Bears. Forget the quarterback. You got the ninth pick overall. Get a really good defensive lineman. Because if you're going to have any success next year in the Matt Eberflus system, you're going to have to get it. And this is a draft that doesn't have a lot of those three techniques like last year that can rush from the inside. So if you can get one of those three tech, and there's really only one, really, at the end of the day, there's really just the Murphy kid from Texas. If you can get him, then you better take him. There's always going to be edges that you can find, but it's hard to find 300-pound men that can rush the passer. So that would be one advice. And then if I were to give Howie Roseman advice, I would say, Howie, look, you've signed so many guys that have veteran qualities to them. You're a veteran team. You can find later round picks. Go get the best corner you can get. Be as aggressive to get the corner that you want as you were aggressive with getting Jalen Smith. Because you're not going to hold up in Vic Fangio's scheme if you think you're going to play with Bradbury and a man-to-man and with Slay. Now, I know you're counting on your defensive front to win, but I think that. And then Dallas, I think this is the most critical draft for Dallas. They've got to find an offensive lineman that could be plug and play. At left tackle, preferably.
Do you think he'll still be available to the Bears at 9, or do you think Atlanta takes him at 8?
No, Atlanta's probably, Atlanta's probably thinking they're going to take an edge. Although with Raheem Morrison there, I think he could be in play there. He's really a good player. He's under the radar here because nobody talks about him. Because what happens in the mocks, Mike, is everybody just keeps using the same names over and over and over again. They mess up the order a little bit. Oh, Adunze's going here and this guy's. But nobody talks about this defensive draft has really about 8 to 9 players that have first round grades on them. Now, some guys have lower first round grades, which really are second round grades. So if you have a chance to get that kind of guy, whether you're in a team, and most of these teams need defensive help. The Raiders need corners. All these teams need defensive help. So I think it would behoove you. Everybody wants to trade up to get the quarterback and trade up to get the receiver. See, the receiver board is a little bit skewed because once you get past Harrison, Neighbors, and, you get past those two guys, and then all of a sudden you get a little bit of an iffy, and then you get a Dunze who's going to go early. Those three, and then now it becomes, is Brian Thomas healthy enough? What's his medical, right, off the field? Then you get into those two Texas kids. Yeah, are they going to come in and plug and play? They're not number one receivers. That's when it gets a little hairy.
Michael, really quickly, because Mike still has two more questions in Palms Pressing 3. As far as the corner position goes, there's been a lot of steam lately on Terrion Arnold from Alabama, but I've always been of the firm belief it was going to be Quinyon Mitchell as the first corner off the board. Have you heard anything there?
Here's what I would say. I think sometimes you have to watch the tape and see what the team does to define the player. Everybody has Alabama's two corners going in the first round. Nick Saban, for one of the few times in his coaching career, didn't play much man-to-man last year. What does that tell you? What does that tell you? Tells you maybe Nick doesn't think they're really good man-to-man players. I think Mitchell is a man-to-man player.
Okay. All right, Michael, question two. How important is the division that a team plays in how that team prepares for and executes the draft?
Oh, I think it's critical. I think it's a tenet of Al Davis behavior. You can't get to the playoffs if you don't win your division. You can get there on a wild card, but you can't win. You're not going anywhere if you can't win your division. And so you've got to be able to match up. You've got to be able to say, how can we defeat this player? Who can we bring in that can cause problems? What do we have to do to beat Team Y? I think it's all about that. And I think everybody tends to focus on the league. But you got to win your division. How do we beat? What's the way to beat Kansas City? If you're And I'm sure Jim Harbaugh is saying the way to beat Kansas City is to be really good in the offensive and defensive fronts. All right? That's how you got a chance to beat them. You know, we're not going to outskill them. We're not going to out quarterback them. We got to find a way to win the game. And so I think that's really important. I think it's probably the biggest criteria in team building. And if you don't do that, if you're not aware of it, I always had a board in my office, Mike, that had every position in the division we played and graded by how we rank. Who has the best free safety? Who has the best? And to see that, I got Sparky Anderson did that years ago for the Cincinnati Reds. He always compared his team to the other teams in his division. And so we use that logic.
All right, the final question is about the Jontay Porter situation in the NBA. And obviously this has been the headlines with the lifetime ban, the collusion with the bookies, his own betting and that. A couple-part question here, Michael. One, what are the chances that this same situation could happen in the NFL, given that the NBA is a league run by the players of the NFL is not? And number two, what should Roger Goodell and the owners do to try to safeguard that it never happens in the NFL?
I don't see it ever happening in the NFL because unless the quarterback's controlling it, right? Because it's hard to get the ball. You know, it's hard to have a prop bet with a guy. Now, you know, even if the game plan, Mike, let's just hypothetically say the game plan is geared towards player Y getting the ball a bunch, okay? Got that. All right, so player Y goes and bets his prop bet because he knows he's going to get the ball a bunch. Well, the game starts and all of a sudden he can't get him the ball. You know, it's really hard. It's really challenging. So I think it isn't. But I think the beautiful thing, and Stormy did this in Stormfront, is the combination between the leagues and the books working together to see that something that looks out of the realm, out of the ordinary, right? You know, it's like when the Great Britain had that postal scandal, right? Something was out of the ordinary. And when you see that, immediately you recognize and you move forward to change. I think that's something the league is going to constantly do. And if the players are stupid enough like Porter to be willing to forego a career over really nothing, not a lot of money, then that's really not being very smart.
The books communicating with the league, the books communicating with each other. Matt Holt and U.S. Integrity have a role in this. I think they're one of their great things that they do in conjunction with, you know, reporting where there's odd betting patterns is investigation of some of these officials, Michael, especially in these smaller conferences, smaller divisions where they don't make much money and don't have a high profile in that. You see in South America, a tennis chair umpire was just suspended for 7 years for point shaving in tennis matches, and he was betting on the matches.
Only seven?
That's what Mitch said. Why not lifetime? But anyhow, okay. Right. So the more the communication is, the more you weed these things out. If you're not communicating, then this story just wouldn't get reported. Also, I do have to say, on an obscure player taking a bet to win over $1 million with three correlated bets in the same game parlay seems foolhardy to me as well.
Well, yeah, I think to me, and that's where I look, let's face it, Mike, there's a lot of methodology to get this thing where you guys know when something looks fishy too immediately. I mean, you know, and the league can too. As for the NFL officials, they're graded with a fine-tooth comb. And I know I find that hard to believe because Scott Novak, how he comes back every year, I have no idea. But they're graded with a – it's not him. It's all the crew. And I think that scrutiny is good for the league. It doesn't always translate in being good, getting good officiated games, but it's good for this part of the NFL game.
And Mike, what you said about that, you know, $80,000 parlay to win $1 million over, you were just talking about the NFL draft props, and you were like, "Yeah, we have $500 limits here." On like, what? How are you getting down that type of money? No shock at all. It was a paused or frozen bet, whatever you want to call it, didn't go through because you're betting on an obscure player at that type of number.
So they accepted the bet. I don't know who the book is or what state, but they accepted the bet. Now they have to apply to the gaming commission to not pay that bet, right? To negate the bet. And of course now the NBA statement is grounds enough for that to happen.
With the investigation coming through the way it is, fascinating. Really appreciate your time, Mike Palm.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Michael.
Have a great day.
Mike. Thank you.
Good luck with your bets today. See you tomorrow.